This is Polling Matters. My name is Kieran Pedley. Regular listeners to this podcast will know that we've been going around the battlegrounds, the regions, so to speak, looking at the key seats to watch out for and the key trends that might be influential during the election. We've been to Scotland and obviously spoke to John Curtis, and we've also been to London speaking to Tony Travers from the LSE. But what about Wales? One of the striking things of this Parliament is the lack of attention that seems to be paid to Wales. Is that because there's nothing going on? Or actually, is there something going on behind the scenes that we need to know about? I'm pleased as ever to be joined by Rob Vance. And our guest today is Professor Roger Scully from the University of Cardiff. Roger, welcome to Polling Matters.
Thanks very much.
So I guess the place to start, I think, here is looking at Wales more generally. As with any region, Roger, I suppose you've got to take in the history into account when you're analysing the current political situation. So, I mean, what do you think we need to know about when we're looking at Wales?
I think historically there are two major things to remember with Wales. One is a very long-standing weakness of the Conservative tradition in Wales. 1858 is the last year that the Conservatives did better in Wales than in England in a general election. More or less since the franchise was expanded in the latter half of the 19th century, the Conservatives have done persistently worse. And the obverse of that has been one-party dominance. First of all, under the Liberals for about 50 years leading up to World War I, and from the 1930s onwards, Labour. Labour have won the most votes and an absolute majority of Welsh seats in every one of the last 19 Welsh general elections.
So I suppose the fact that there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to Wales in the last Parliament would suggest that normal service continues as we approach a general election. Am I wrong?
Well, not entirely wrong, but maybe a little bit erroneous. If we look at the more recent history, I think that's also very interesting. The years up to 2010, Labour in Wales was actually seeing bigger declines in its vote share than Labour costs Scotland and England in general. And in 2010, Labour's vote share in Wales was down to its lowest point since 1918. And given that in 1918 Labour didn't even stand candidates in about a third of the seats, in reality it's Labour's worst vote share in Wales in a general election ever, worse than they had done even under Michael Foot in 1983. That's how bad Labour's decline was. Labour still kept two-thirds of the seats in Wales. That partly reflects two things, at least one of which we'll talk about, I'm sure, later, which is the divided opposition to Labour in Wales. There was no single clear challenger in the way that they faced the SNP in Scotland. The other factor, though, was that Labour, frankly, simply got lucky. They just held on to quite a few seats, including some in Swansea, for instance, Newport and a few others. They narrowly avoided significantly worse damage. Now, what's happened since 2010? Well, almost from the moment the ink was dry on the coalition agreement in London, and Labour in Wales was no longer tarnished by association with an unpopular government in London, their polling rating in Wales recovered very rapidly. And we saw in 2011 in the National Assembly election, on the same night that Scottish Labour was having its worst ever devolved election, Welsh Labour had its best ever devolved election. 2012, Welsh Labour again did strikingly well in the local elections in Wales in that year. And by the end of 2012, Labour seemed to be right back at the absolute peak of their dominance. The small number of polls that had been conducted in Wales in 2012 all had Labour above 50% vote intention for the general election. And then the last two and a bit years, there's been something very interesting which has hardly been noticed, that slowly, steadily, Labour's support levels have been diminishing. I mean, it's nearly always been sort of margin of error changes from one poll to the next, and I think because of that, people didn't notice until recently the cumulative scale of what had actually gone on. And basically, from 2012 to the end of 2014, Labour lost fully one-third of its support in Wales. A fair bit of that has gone to UKIP, which has made significant recent progress in Wales. Other little bits have gone to the other parties, but none of them has really been capitalising particularly on Labour's decline. But it has been very noticeable that Labour are now back at roughly the same levels of support they were getting in the 2010 general election. Obviously, and there's a contrast there, obviously, with Scotland, where they're doing much worse, but also with England, where even at present, Labour are still doing significantly better than they did in the last general election.
So, Rob, I'll bring you in here now just to read out some of these figures from a poll, general election poll, Westminster poll for Wales, before Christmas. So had Labour on 36 points, Conservatives 23, UKIP on 18, and Plaid on 11. On face value, as you know, that looks quite good for Labour, but as Roger says, there's something going on here in Wales, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's a series of different local races, which is what the context that we need to put those numbers into. So I think you're looking at some urban seats that Labour might have hoped to win off the Liberal Democrats. I believe there's a particularly student, is it Cardiff Central, currently held by the Liberal Democrats, that Labour would look to win, which on national kind of swing ideas you might well expect them to. But actually the growth, if they're not picking up the votes of people who are now voting Green in those kind of areas, then it might be a seat that the Lib Dems could hold. You've got UKIP growing there, but I think it's still pretty unlikely. I'm looking to Roger here in terms of whether this is that they would actually win a seat there, despite having across Wales been able to pick up an MEP in 2014. And presumably would be hoping over time to be able to build up a council base and so on. But at the moment, their support isn't sufficiently localised. And then you've got Plaid sort of remaining, you know, unable to do what the SNP have done in Scotland. It's a sort of inevitable and probably unfair comparison to be drawing, but I think it's an important one that the agenda of Plaid, as I understand it, is quite a different one to the SNP. It's been less avowedly about, you know, pure independence for all sorts of reasons, primarily economic, but also has a much stronger and more profound kind of, and much more, I believe, localised kind of cultural agenda about the language and culture, which makes it a very different beast in terms of attracting the kinds of people that have, you know, defected from the SNP, sorry, from Labour to the SNP in Scotland, young people, liberal students, middle-class professionals and so on, who in urban areas are now voting SNP in Glasgow and so on, who are not doing the same in kind of Labour strongholds in Cardiff and the valleys. So what you're seeing there is a very different picture on a local level to what you're actually picking up in the national numbers.
Sure.
Which means that, you know, as we keep on saying, in each place, it's really about those seat by seat, what's happening there, which is going to make the big difference.
So, I mean, obviously there's been no nationalist surge as we've seen in Scotland, in Wales. So, but there must be something behind this Labour gradual decline. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we put it down to?
Well, I think there's a few things, Kieran. One is that, you know, in England as well, there's been some decline in Labour support over the last year to 18 months. We see some of that reflected in Wales, but I think we maybe see that exaggerated a little bit because, I mean, without wishing to be unkind, you know, if you were trying to come up with a Labour leader to be unappealing to much of Labour's traditional working-class Welsh support, Ed Miliband would be a pretty good effort. But I think, you know, the decline isn't just about what we're calling Labour at Westminster. There's also an element to do with the Labour Party specifically in Wales. You know, Labour have been in government in the Welsh Assembly since 1999, on their own since 2011. And if we look at the detailed polling evidence on evaluations of Labour's performance in government in Wales, those are not particularly positive. Although quite a few people in Wales still feel broadly positive towards the Labour Party, nonetheless, you know, there are evaluations of Labour's performance in terms of the health service, which has received a lot of publicity, but also education and the economy. And those evaluations are not particularly strong, and I think that has been also just gradually chipping away, slowly eroding Labour's support base.
But then when we look at the some recent polling on the leaders' ratings, actually, we find that the ratings for the First Minister, Kevin Jones, if I pronounced that correctly, hopefully, are actually pretty good in comparison to some of the other leaders. So there is some popularity still there, at least with the leader of the...
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Kevin Jones and Rhodri Morgan, his predecessor, Labour have been very fortunate in a way they haven't been fortunate, I think, in Scotland, in having popular leaders in the Assembly, at the devolved level, popular leaders who have been seen to have a significant presence and have a widespread popularity. But that personal rating doesn't particularly seem to translate into positive evaluations of his government's record. It's going to be interesting in the election to see to what extent Calvin Jones actually takes a leading role in the Welsh Labour campaign. I mean, thus far, I have to say, in past year, in 2010, in the most recent European elections as well, either he's been curiously diffident about taking a leading role, or Labour have been curiously reluctant to use him. For one reason or the other, he hasn't been that prominent. And given that he is, on all measures, by some distance, you know, the most popular politician in Wales, it does seem rather strange that Labour aren't doing more to try and make him very prominent in the campaign, particularly given that their Westminster leader, Ed Miliband, is, you know, distinctly unappealing to much of the Welsh electorate.
So, Rob, I mean, let's look at UKIP. I always find it remarkable, and I think Nigel Farage is always very keen to bring this up, that UKIP do quite well in Wales, don't they? I mean, this poll here shows 18%. Very similar sort of figures that we're seeing in the national GB polls. Very different to Scotland, of course, where UKIP don't tend to do as well as they do nationally, I think.
They, of course, took a seat in the Euros.
Absolutely. So what do we attribute that to? I mean, Nigel Farage wants us to think that that is, you know, Labour neglecting its heartlands and wants it to be part of a narrative, I guess, saying that we can eat into the Labour vote in the north of England, and we're also doing it in Wales as well, because Labour is just taking their core vote, to use that phrase, for granted. I mean, do you buy that, or do you think there's other things going on? I mean, it surprises me that you could do that well in Wales, doesn't it, you?
I don't think it does necessarily surprise me. I mean, I think there has been a more vociferous anti-UKIP kind of noise coming out of Scotland. But I think the more important thing is to think about where it is that UKIP are doing well. So rather than UKIP doing well in Wales per se, and even talking about, you know, if you like, the sort of the core vote for Labour in Wales, I mean, we're not talking about UKIP winning in you know, the sort of the South Wales valleys. We're talking about them doing well in you know, more rural areas near the English border, areas which have got, you know, rural you know, deprivation, and you've also got areas where there are you know, the classic kind of imagined UKIP kind of problem place, which you know, is you know, not necessarily keeping up with globalisation, the other big trends in terms of economic and social deprivation which are going on in, you know, bits of England which are more like bits of Wales than bits of Wales are like other bits of Wales, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. UKIP, up until about mid-2013, were really doing very little in Wales. I mean, they just scraped the last MEP in 2009 on a low turnout, but, you know, did very little at the 2012 Welsh local elections, did very little. Yeah, still have never won an Assembly member, despite talking up their chances a lot in 2011 and 2007. It was only really in the latter part of 2013 that their support really seemed to spike upwards, and thus far has held at a pretty you know, good level for them. Part of what I think this may be about, though, in Wales, is those two points I said right at the beginning about long-term Labour dominance and long-term Conservative weakness. And we know from a lot of the detailed studies by Ford and Goodwin and others that UKIP tap well into sort of quite a lot of, you know, working-class support, both sort of relatively impoverished left-behinds, but also they do quite well in some of the sort of the self-employed aspirational classes. And lots of those people in England historically, you know, have been sort of, you know, the basis of working class conservatism. People are relatively socially conservative, you know, particularly don't buy into much of the, sort of the more liberal social agenda that Labour has moved towards over recent years and even decades. Because of this long-standing weakness of conservatism in Wales, this deep-rooted sense there really seems to be much of the Welsh population that the Conservatives are a fundamentally non-Welsh party, lots of that working-class support never quite did become working-class Tories. They, by and large, by default, stuck with Labour. Despite being fairly socially conservative, you know, not that thrilled with lots of the things that the Labour Party was doing. And I so think, therefore, a lot of that support was therefore potentially up for grabs.
Let's talk about Plaid. I guess the, as Rob called it earlier, a sort of maybe unfair comparison is to compare Plaid to the SNP. But at the same time, my understanding is that these two parties say they will negotiate together in any coalition agreement. And, you know, it is an interesting comparison to make. Why do we think, then, if Labour aren't quite sealing the deal in Wales, that there isn't this Plaid surge in comparison to what we've seen with the SNP?
Well, I think there's a number of factors there. I mean, first and perhaps most obviously, Plaid are not the main party of government at the devolved level in Wales, as the SNP are in Scotland. Secondly, and equally obviously, there hasn't been a major sort of epoch-changing event like the Scottish referendum in Wales recently. Thirdly, I think also, you know, the sort of indigenous native news media in Wales, you know, Welsh TV and particularly newspapers, are weaker in Scotland. Lots of my Scottish friends complain about the Scottish news media, but you know, they should come to Wales and they don't realise when they're well off. And because of all of those factors, Plaid Cymru really struggle at the moment for profile, for public attention. You know, they're the third party in the Assembly. The London news media are pretty much not interested in them at all. So they really do struggle to get attention. One of the things we've been picking up in our polls over recent times, for instance, is their party leader, Leanne Wood, amongst those people who know who she is and who have a view about her, is steadily growing in popularity and is doing pretty well. But a lot of Welsh people still are very dimly aware of who exactly she is.
I think the figures say 36% don't know who she is.
Well, that's on one way of kind of asking about this. I mean, if you look just at, okay, a small subsample, but the Welsh subsample of poll that Servation really recently did, where they were showing the photos of leaders and asking people, you know, a clear majority of people in Wales were not sure or admitted they didn't know who the photo of Leanne Wood actually was. A surprisingly large number of people seem to think it was Caroline Lucas, for instance. Now, amongst those people who know who she is, she's been steadily rising in popularity, but she does, you know, struggle for profile. And I mean, that'd be one reason why I think, you know, were we to get multi-party leader debates with Plaid Cymru, you know, Leanne Wood represented in them, I think that would be potentially greatly to her and her party's advantage. I mean, unless she completely messed up, which, you know, I don't think she would, because she's become a pretty good media performer, I think this would greatly aid Plaid's profile, which may well be one of the reasons why those debates don't happen.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Rob, the debates are, you know, have been on the agenda for the last sort of month, 6 weeks, well, maybe even longer. You can see why, given what Roger said, that Plaid would like to be part of the debates, can't you?
Yeah, and you can see also full well why Ed Miliband and the Labour Party, whilst they're obviously giving all the noises for wanting those debates, it's a pretty different setup. You know, originally, if it was just going to be, you know, Nigel Farage, that was, you know, pretty much ideal for Labour. And now having the SNP implied in there is doubly bad. And I think I wasn't aware until Roger was talking there about the sort of, if you like, the latent problem of saliency. You know, don't think anybody in Scotland has a problem of knowing who Alex Salmond is, you know, as the First Minister, and nor Nicola Sturgeon, who's now obviously taken over that role. Whereas, you know, if there is clearly a kind of, it's not that the party are unpopular, but they're just not cutting through, then being on the national debates, which are going to be fed through, you know, is clearly going to have, you know, some kind of significant impact. The fact that Labour seem to be continually pushing for the debates to happen and haven't been kicking up a fuss about including Plaid suggests that either they're not that worried about it, or just think that the sort of the being able to debate and having Farage there against Cameron is actually worth the sort of the trade-off. But I think that says quite a lot about the sort of electoral calculations that are going on. It suggests that the party probably isn't that worried about losing seats in Wales, and also reasonably confident about being able to take some of them back, that actually having Farage and Plaid, you know, having that exposure and publicity is a kind of a net neutral effect, you know, and so pushing for the debates.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's also another factor with Plaid. You know, we should remember, of course, the very first devolved elections, 1999, Plaid actually had a higher share of the vote than the SNP did in Scotland. People often forget that. Not long after that, of course, two things happened which very much hampered Plaid Cymru's electoral success in Wales. One is they helped defenestrate Alan Michael. The other is that they themselves defenestrated their own very popular leader, David Wigley, and replaced him with Ian Wyn-Jones, who then remained party leader for more than a decade. And Ian Wyn-Jones, in many respects, a very admirable politician, a very effective politician, did very well in Plaid Cymru's period in coalition government in Wales, but almost utterly lacking in voter appeal. And Plaid electorally really just wasted more than a decade. And they're only really now sort of trying to fight their way back, having essentially wasted the years from 2000 right through to 2011. Thus far, it seems Leanne Wood has, I think she's certainly raised spirits in the party. The party, you know, love her. I mean, she's very popular internally in the party. But it's interesting that Plaid's electoral performance has actually been relatively best in areas of traditional strength. And, you know, if you look at where they're looking to hopefully pick up seats, it's, you know, Ynys Môn, Anglesey, it's Ceredigion, and it's Llanelli. and only Llanelli of those seats could even vaguely be counted as a sort of traditional, you know, valleys seat, and it's very much on the edge of the valleys. Mostly Plaid is still at the moment about mining its more traditional seams of support.
So if we look forward, bringing that all together, if we look forward to the election, obviously not very far away, I mean, what do we think might happen in Wales? I mean, from my calculations, it looks like a short while ago there might be as many as 7 Labour gains. Now we're thinking of something closer to 2. Yeah. But everything's in flux, isn't it, Roger? I mean, how much can we really be confident about what's going to happen in Wales and obviously in the rest of the country?
Yeah, and I think 18 months ago we could have been confident that Labour would be picking up several seats in Wales. They would have been looking to get back to the sort of, you know, say the 34 that they won in 1997 and 2001. At the moment, on most standard ways of projecting opinion poll results, they're likely to pick up 2 seats in Cardiff, where they've been doing very well in recent years. Cardiff North is the most marginal seat in Wales. Tory majority last time, fewer than 200 votes. Ashcroft polling puts them ahead there, albeit not by a huge margin. Cardiff Central, the Liberal Democrats suffering very heavily there in a seat with a big student population. Ashcroft polling again there has put Labour actually quite comfortably ahead, and I think they must be strong favourites to gain that. Beyond that, you know, polling, for instance, in Carmarthen West and South Pembrokeshire, a seat that Labour won in 2005, they were some way behind. And frankly, you know, if I had to put the mortgage on it, at the moment, I think, you know, I'd say, you know, Labour are not favourites to gain any seats beyond those 2 ones in Cardiff. And Ynys Môn is a distinct possibility, if not yet a probability, for a Labour loss. So, you know, 18 months ago, we would have been saying, you know, Wales would be contributing probably 6 or 7 net gains to Ed Miliband's quest for a parliamentary majority. Now we may well be only looking at 1 or at the most 2 net gains. Wales is going to be significantly punching, I think, below its weight in terms of contributing to Labour's electoral performance. And given that we're also seeing in Scotland Labour probably losing significant ground, it means that the battle for, well, a majority may be unrealistic, but even the battle for to be largest party for Labour essentially comes to depend pretty much exclusively on the party in England.
Rob, I was about to go to you on that. I mean, it does show you actually how significant the marginal battles in England are going to be, doesn't it? If Labour are actually losing out in Scotland, Wales is almost, okay, a gain of 2, but actually that's in the grand scheme of things that could be lost easily elsewhere. It's all going to come on England, isn't it? And the marginal seats there.
I really think so. I mean, I think what I completely buy the analysis Roger just given, and what you're seeing there is in a sense, the places that we're talking about, those seats, there's a lot of interesting local dynamics that we've discussed there, but actually what you're seeing is Cardiff Central is going to be very like Cambridge, you know, is going to be very like other Manchester seats, you know, the places where, you know, Lib Dem student votes are they're going to lose them, and then they're going to probably go Labour. It's not so much the sort of regional battle that's interesting there, it's the very, very hyper local, but actually reflecting nationwide trends that we're seeing in lots of other places. I think Ynys Môn is an interesting example of where, you know, essentially UKIP are going to rob Labour of a seat and hand it, in this case, to Plaid, maybe, you know. But, you know, I think that would be an interesting example of something, a phenomenon that could well happen in other places, but actually it'd be the Conservatives, ironically enough, that could well be the beneficiary of that kind of defection of a working-class, socially conservative vote from Labour to UKIP, and then the Tories being able to get a seat or hold on to a seat, which we might otherwise, you know, expect Labour to win. Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing there is, I think the current election models, if we take 1 or 2 net gains for Labour in Wales, if we look at a net loss of anything up to 20 seats in Scotland, you know, but, you know, who knows, it, you know, the trends are sort of starting to move against that a little bit, but, you know, Curtis, even, you know, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, was saying that, you know, 20 gains was by no means would not shock him. A net gain of maybe 5 or 6 seats in London, that puts a hell of a lot of pressure on the party winning seats in the Trans-Pennine Corridor and the East Midlands, where arguably those trends are actually much, you know, I think particularly in the Midlands, lots of the trends that we're seeing is much more against Labour and specifically Ed Miliband than in other bits.
And Roger, I mean, looking more widely, one of the things we like to do on this programme is to sort of put our guests on the spot and talk about the election itself and, you know, make some predictions. It's been a mixed bag, I think Rob, so far. I don't think we've had a lot of people that are prepared to stick their neck out too far. How do you see that, both in Wales, you talked about with maybe a net gain of two, but that's based on current polling. How do you see Wales going, and what's your thoughts on the wider Westminster race?
Overall, for the general election, I think I still lean towards Labour as largest party, but you know, I'm not expecting them to win a majority. Within Wales itself, I think we're going to see an election that is sort of is more interesting than the results will on the surface look. I think we're not going to see an enormous amount of aggregate change. Labour will, I suspect, pick up, you know, those couple of seats in Cardiff, probably may lose one. Beyond that, I doubt we're going to actually see much in terms of seat changes. You know, maybe the Lib Dems losing Brecon and Radnor, possibly losing Ceredigion as well. But you know, in some respects, it's going to look just like so many other previous elections. As I said earlier, we've had 19 elections in a row where Labour have had the most votes and the majority of the seats, and we're going to have that again. So it's going to be probably 20 in a row in that sense. There aren't going to be huge aggregate shifts in seats. But I think beneath that, there's actually quite a lot of interesting stuff rumbling under the surface, much of which, of course, could have very interesting implications for just a year on. There'll be the Assembly election. And yes, if you have Labour in power in London as a minority, maybe running into significant troubles, you know, attracting unpopularity, that could then have very significant implications for Labour's dominance in the Assembly just 12 months later.
So obviously, Roger, most people would agree, or it certainly looks like right now, that there isn't going to be either a Conservative majority or a Labour majority, which then naturally lends itself to some kind of coalition agreement, or maybe confidence and supply, which we've discussed in the past. Mm-hmm. What's less known, I suppose, is what the Plaid position might be. Yeah. We've talked about how the Nationalists in Scotland and Wales would seem like they'd negotiate together, but what do you think Plaid would be looking for from any potential government?
Well, I mean, Plaid have committed to working with the SNP and the Greens in a sort of joint negotiating team. I think, you know, they have a stronger, longer-standing relationship with the SNP than with the Greens. I think, you know, keeping those three parties together might be difficult. The SNP and Plaid might be a bit easier, not least because Leanne Wood and Nicola Sturgeon seem to have an extremely strong personal relationship. But there is still the possibility, which one would expect, the Westminster parties may well try and exploit for sort of divide and rule tactics. I mean, what Plaid have said, you know, they want is significantly extended devolution for Wales, but also to address a long-standing grievance of many people in the Welsh political system. What they suggest is systematic underfunding of Wales through the Barnett formula. And there is a potential for division there between Plaid and the SNP because, I mean, you know, basically Scotland does quite well out of the Barnett formula. Wales does rather less well. And so, you know, one would at least need to finesse the position to arrive at a sort of solution that was mutually acceptable for both Scotland and Wales, you know, that both the SNP and Plaid could defend. And there's, you know, I suppose the potential there for some divisions. I think generally, you know, the agenda would be more devolution, addressing fair funding, and then also, you know, they've talked about some sort of change to the austerity policies. What exactly that means, I think, still needs to be fleshed out somewhat, and obviously would also have to take into account negotiation with presumably Labour. I mean, I think one of the things that would be very interesting if we get to that sort of situation is to see to what extent the different parties are really intellectually and organisationally ready for dealing with that situation in a way, for instance, that I think, despite having talked about coalition and hung parliaments and all of that for decades, in many respects, I think the Liberal Democrats fundamentally were not ready for dealing with that situation in 2010 and ended up, I think, really negotiating quite a poor deal on many of the key issues, even if, you know, they say they got lots of their detail of their manifesto, but on a lot of the real key fundamentals, I think Lib Dems were fundamentally not ready for a scenario they themselves had been talking about for decades. would the SNP and Plaid Cymru be ready and be ready to deal with the potential for sort of, you know, the parties trying to divide them and split them? Frankly, I don't know. In terms of the influence of the SNP and Plaid, it would seem obvious that some sort of hung parliament, there would be the potential to come to a deal with Labour, would clearly seem to be the position in which they could maximise their influence. But I think the politics of how that all played out, who was seen to give way on what, how negotiations were presented and their outcomes spun, I think would be absolutely defining for the next 2 years for politics, respectively, in Scotland and Wales. And we've seen with the Liberal Democrats, you really need to be very careful what you wish for. And the Lib Dems had been sort of dreaming of this scenario for years. It finally happened, and it's ended up causing immense political damage to their party.
That was Polling Matters. My name is Kieran Pedley. The music you're hearing is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks again to my guests, Rob Vance and Roger Scully. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kieran.